Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.
Failure is an option on the trail of the world's toughest mountain race. Failure is an option could almost be many of us' mantras for Monday morning. It's the story of an average runner who sets out to discover just how far he can go. With the support and misgivings of his family, and aware that his quickest years are behind him, Matt Wyman leaves the Saturday morning 5 kilometer jog-stroll to push towards 100-mile ultra marathons and beyond. Delighted to be joining me and telling me what happened next is the author of Failure is an Option, Matt Wyman. Matt, good morning to you.
Morning.
For many of us, a 5 kilometer run on a Saturday morning would be enough. And, sure. You know, and as you said, you are perhaps your best years are behind you. Now, I don't think that the best years are behind you until at least you hit about 85. So what in the name of all that's good and mighty possessed you to push the envelope, as the sports coaches would say?
So I think my journey is not actually that unusual. I've just taken it to an extreme. Running is incredibly popular as a sport, as a way of life, as a way of keeping your head in check. And I just sort of got into doing a 5K every Saturday morning. Every Saturday I go down and try and improve my time, and became incredibly competitive with myself, and kind of got to a point where my eyeballs were threatening to burst if I could just about shave off a second. And my daughter was just sort of, you know, ambling behind me and then starting to go past. And it kind of dawned on me that perhaps, you know, I wasn't going to get any quicker. Those days were gone, but I could go longer. So I started sort of extending it to 10K, to half marathons, to marathons. And then you just get this kind of feel-good feeling when you've done one and you kind of think, well, what's next? And I just found myself progressing from marathons to ultras, which is anything really beyond a marathon. So anything beyond 26 miles. So it could be 30 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles. And as soon as I discovered the existence of a 100-mile race, I just couldn't get it out of my head. And even though it felt like something that was completely beyond me, beyond my abilities, I couldn't let it lie. So it became a kind of like a one-year project. Can I get myself in a physical and mental shape to take on a distance of that length?
What is it? Because I don't run. I mean, a long career of playing very bad rugby has meant that my knees are completely shot, and I sound like the fourth of whatever, the first day of grouse season when I get up in the mornings, and my knees go off like. So, but you know, I come across this a lot, and we are on radio, and we are forever interviewing, not forever interviewing, but we tend to interview guys who do the Marathon de la Sable, you know, which is currently taking place in the Sahara, and people doing ultramarathon. What is it with running? Is it that addictive that you know? Because I always hear this: they start with 5K, and then it becomes a half marathon, and we've got a presenter who did a half marathon not so long ago, and then it's a marathon, and then for most people that would be enough. But it seems to be: is it the endorphins afterwards? Is it the training? Or do you get into a sort of zen-like state when you are plodding along?
I think a bit of everything. For me, we live quite safe existences, and you know, we deal with sort of daily responsibilities like paying the mortgage, looking after the kids, working, and we don't really get out of our comfort zones. And I think that was part of the appeal, was that just the terror of thinking, can I put myself into this environment? And actually, the first time that I took on a 100-mile ultra, I would say that the hardest challenge was the week before, in terms of just keeping a level on my sort of panic, thinking, what have I done? This is nuts. And then when you actually start, when you start putting one foot in front of the other, you're absolutely right. You do sort of go into a bit of a zone, really, where you can't think 100 miles ahead, because it's too much. You can't compute how you're going to run that. But what you can do is one foot in front of the other. And I think that that's quite a good mindset that you can take to any aspect of life, really, that it doesn't matter how big the challenge is, if you sort of chunk it down and put process over outcome, if you like. And it is incredibly rewarding to look back and say, I've done that. And it does give you quite a lot of confidence and a sense of fulfillment, I think, that you have put yourself out there into a frightening kind of environment, mentally frightening. I mean, I don't consider myself to be some sort of alpha athlete. I'm just a regular guy who, I'm not particularly fast either. You know, I'm very much a mid-pack runner, which is what the book is all about, really. So just about not pushing for the win, but just pushing to complete something that feels beyond your comfort zone.
My next question is, how long does a 100-kilometer or 100-mile marathon take?
Well, a lot of the races have cutoffs, right. So you can generally estimate 100 miles will anything from sort of 28 hours to 36 hours. It largely depends on the terrain. So if you've got very difficult mountainous terrain, it might be longer. But really the benchmark for 100-mile ultras is 24 hours. It's not a cutoff, but it's a target that if you can complete 100 miles in 24 hours, it essentially means you complete 100 miles in one day.
And is that continuous?
Yes, it is continuous. So it might start at 8 in the morning and you generally have until midday the next day. But if you can get to the finish by 8 o'clock the next morning, that's a 24-hour 100-mile.
I have friends who've done the London Marathon and one of my friends said that, you know, he hit the wall. And runners talk about the wall, which is where you think, you know, what am I doing? You know, why am I here? I am just a dot on the universe. You know, it's not worth it. I want my mum. All those sort of sensible thoughts. And that's on a 26-kilometer or mile run. I mean, what's the wall like when you're doing 100?
So really, you're slowing things down quite considerably. And to begin with, it almost feels like you could go faster. And people do that and then pay the price 50 miles down the road. So you have to kind of have the confidence to think, I can just keep this slow and I can keep this steady. And it does get hard, even when you're just, as long as if you're running continuously at a relaxed pace, it's still going to get hard. At 50 miles, you know, you're knackered. And thinking, how am I going to do this again? And then it gets dark and then it gets cold or, you know, all these different sort of, you get tired, you get mentally exhausted. But what I find on these things is that you're in the same boat with 300 or 400 other people. And that's where it really becomes quite special because you meet people from all walks of life. This is, I'm talking about in the mid to the back of the pack, really. I'm not pushing for the win here, but people who are just completely out of their comfort zones, who have the same shared objective to try to complete something that is just beyond their expectation. And so you sort of pull together really just by having, you know, idle chat conversation.
I mean, that's the thing that struck me, because you would think that running is the ultimate individual sport. However, and it may be if you are at the front of the pack, however, you know, mid to back, which is what I would be so far back, I would be in the hospitality tent. But, you know, mid to back, presumably you do develop a shared experience. And I use that word, a shared experience together. And you're almost sort of helping each other along.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, everyone is pretty broken towards the end, and it does become a kind of band of brothers and sisters kind of exercise. But then when the sun breaks and you've got through the night and the end is in sight, let's say you've got 20 miles to go, which I know sounds like a long way, but if you've completed 80, you can begin to think about finishing. It becomes the most important thing in your life at that moment in time. And I think that what I like about these sort of distances is there is no guarantee you're going to finish. It is a long way and it is incredibly tough mentally as well as physically. But if you've got that sort of margin of uncertainty that you might fail, that's where we can begin to find our limits. I think if you just sort of went into it thinking, well, I'm going to smash it, it's going to be, you know, I'm definitely going to get there, then you haven't really tested yourself, which is really where the title Failure is an Option comes from, is that there has to be the possibility that you might fail because you're taking on something that is at the limit of your abilities.
What's the preamble? What's the week before a 100-mile run like for you?
It's quite focused, it becomes this kind of monster on the horizon that you can't avoid. So, you know, carrying on with work and trying to, you know, be a dad and all the usual things, but you just know that come the weekend, you're going to be in a completely different environment, a completely different world. So it's about planning, really, making sure that you've got all the right kit that you need to run with, to keep you going, to keep you fueled, keep you warm. Some of these races are unmarked. So right. You have to do your own navigation, which can be another level of interest.
I mean, yes. I mean, in case you sort of, I mean, do they take, I mean, what's the terrain, as they say? What's the environment like? I mean, is it normally on sort of roads or paths, or have you been taken off track and you do have to have a bit of orienteering in there as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the great thing about endurance running is that there are races to suit everyone. You can get 100 mile races on a track, on a 400 meter athletics track.
A bit boring, so, I think. And also, if you get lapped by the cookie runner, it's a bit disheartening, I would say.
There is a niche appeal to it, I think, that some people quite enjoy stripping it back down to there's no navigation to worry about. You're just going round and round a track like a hamster. But I personally prefer the adventures where you're going from A to B. And one race I took on, which is in the book, which is the Dragon's Back, which is regarded as the world's toughest mountain race. But it's a multi-day event. It's over 6 days, so it's actually more than 100 miles. It's about 240 miles over 6 days from the north of Wales to the south. And it's across the sort of mountainous, knuckled spine of Wales. So you're breaking that down to kind of 40 miles a day, I suppose. And that's unnavigated and also unsupported, by which I mean you don't have a crew waiting for you every 20 miles to kind of cater for your every whim. You're on your own. You have to source your own water, fuel yourself. And it's incredibly difficult because when your head goes, and it will do after about 8 hours of running, you've got to look after yourself. You've got to make sure that you're hydrated and fueled. And it's all part of the challenge.
When your head goes, where does your head go then after about 8 hours? Does it go to some very strange places?
It can do. I mean, it's quite a common thing to hallucinate after, generally in the night. So if you've set off at, say, 8 o'clock in the morning and you've been running for 14 or 15 hours, you're tired. Your brain is saying, this isn't normal. What, you know, when are we going to stop? And because there's a lack of light, the signals to your brain can start to become a bit scrambled. So I've had many occasions where I've been running with dinosaurs, all sorts. You sort of look around and think, and the weird thing is you know you're hallucinating, not madly, but you just see things. You know that it's not real, but it doesn't stop. So you keep seeing things as you go.
Any particular sort of dinosaur? I mean, obviously, Brontosaurus, that'd be fine, but, you know, T-Rex.
Actually, nice ones.
Nice dinosaurs.
For me, it's always nice ones. I'm not particularly threatened by them, which is fine.
What? I mean, you mentioned your daughter sprinting past you was the point you thought, okay, I'll do something different on offer myself new challenges. What does your family think of this sudden change into the man who runs with dinosaurs?
So the first time I took on an ultra marathon, my wife's main objection was that I might die, which is
just a small one. It's just a small, yeah. You know.
So we had to have a bit of a conversation that I was taking it seriously and I understand, you know, what's involved, and I wasn't going to die. But over the years, my wife and daughter have both extended their reach as runners. I mean, they've both enjoyed sort of the 5K on a Saturday. And my wife, in fact, this weekend completed a 50-mile race in the south of England, which she's delighted by. And my daughter is also following in her footsteps. She's 19 now, but she completed her first 50K. I mean, it is an experience. And I think the whole point of the book is to say, look, this isn't just for elite, extreme athletes. It's for everyone, and anyone can do it. It just involves mental strength and commitment, and it's a learning process. I mean, there's plenty of races that I haven't finished, and you have to look back and go, well, what went wrong?
And that's, I mean, failure is an option. I mean, is it a point then that taking part and seeing how far you can go is part of the appeal of this?
Yeah, absolutely. And when you get into that grey area between what you think is possible and what feels impossible, you discover all sorts of different things about yourself, really, about how far you can go, which is generally further than you think that you can push yourself. And just the whole experience of thinking, well, I've travelled out of my comfort zone, even though I didn't necessarily get to the finish line, I still travelled beyond that point that I thought was possible, which is a reward in its own right. So the times where I haven't finished a race, of course, I've been, you know, annoyed at myself or a bit disappointed, but I've looked back and thought, well, I made it to the start line. And that takes a certain level of courage when you're not a particularly outstanding athlete. And it's something to build on for next time. So it is a huge learning curve, an ongoing work in progress, I suppose.
I've spoken to people who've walked long distances. You know, they've done, I don't know, they've done the Camino in the north of Spain, for example, because we're based in Spain. And they talk about, you know, when you come in to, you know, Santiago de Compostela, it's almost that spiritual stroke emotional experience. So when you get into that last 5K and you realize that you are going to do it, and especially when you did your first one, that must have been quite something.
Yeah, absolutely. You kind of, on my first ever 100 miler, I was kind of fantasizing about, you know, in the middle of the night, fantasizing about what would it be like to win it. And you kind of think about the moment that you might see the finish line. You don't sort of think about it too much because you've got an awful long way to go, but occasionally it slips into your mind thinking, what's it going to be like? And I thought probably I would just be an emotional wreck, but actually you're right. It's the last 5K when it dawns on you, literally as the sun's coming up, dawns on you that you're going to finish this, you're going to do it, that it is a very emotional moment because you're kind of broken, really exhausted emotionally and physically. So those barriers are very low. So you only have to think, I'm going to do this, to find that the tears are flowing. And then actually to finish, by that point, I was kind of over the emotional bit. And I was just so elated and delighted to be stopping. I just wanted to be still. So it is an incredibly emotional moment to look back at the fact that you've run 100 miles, which is, it's still a very difficult distance to visualize, to get into your head, to think that you can run that in one go.
And the day after, I've got to ask you this, Matt, what was the day after? What's the recovery period like? Do you basically get not so much an ice bath, do you move the entire bedroom or bathroom into the fridge to sort of recover?
So you know when you watch toddlers learning how to go up the stairs? It's kind of like that, on all fours, and you know, slowly starting to pick up the pace a bit. But yeah, it takes a few days to, it takes a good few weeks, I would say. I mean, in terms of sleep and eating again, you know, just rebuilding, because the amount of calories that you burn in doing something like that. But it's also, with it, is an incredibly a sense of peace and fulfillment that you know, you have achieved something really quite amazing, just being a regular man or woman from the street, really. It is a sport that's open to everyone.
I suppose one of the things behind this, and one of the things behind the book, is that you describe yourself as an ordinary guy, is that anybody can do it. We all have the ability, perhaps, to do something extraordinary. It's not, you don't just sit on a sofa and go, oh, well, he can do it, but he's just this, obviously got this amazing inner strength. And the book, Failure is Not an Option, is just proves that isn't the case.
Absolutely. And as I say, you meet people from all walks of life and all ages. I mean, you see 60, 70-year-old men and women who, you know, will finish these things. And in terms of the training, it isn't like a kind of a massive commitment. You're not going out and running 60 miles in one session. It's almost like training for a marathon, really. And then in that training session, if you can do one, you basically run a marathon. Maybe 6 weeks beforehand, and it's just about slowing down and running on tired legs, really. So it's just sort of increasing your volume, but not going out for, you know, 10 hours at a time.
What was more difficult, more challenging, doing the 100 meters or doing the 100 miles or writing this book?
They're both very similar, actually. Writing books is you can't look at a blank page and think, I've got to fill 300 pages here, because again, it's like you can't visualize how that's going to happen. You just have to take one page at a time, just as you take one mile at a time. And it is very much process over outcome. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed writing this book. I just wanted to be very honest and take a realistic look at running endurance races from the point of view of an everyman, really, just someone who just wanted to find out my limits without any possibility that I might win these things, because that's never going to happen.
The book is called Failure is Not an Option. It's by Matt Wyman, who we've been speaking to today. Matt, if people want to find you on the social medias or on a website, where can they discover more of your adventures?
You can find me on Instagram at Matt_Wyman, WHYMAN, or my website, mattwyman.com.
And what's the next one up then? Where are you next running? If people want to come and cheer you and go, you're completely barking mad, where can they find you, Matt?
My next race is the South Downs Way 100. It's a 100-mile ultramarathon in June, and it starts, well, it basically runs across the south of England. So if you want to come out to some windy beacon or hill, I'll be there, not running particularly fast, and very happy to have a conversation with anyone who wants to stop me.
Well, Matt, I doff my cap to you. The book is called Failure is an Option. It's by Matt Wyman. It's also going to be available as a virtual download from our virtual bookstore. Failure is not an option. Matt Wyman, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
At Giant Eagle, we believe in better. And that includes finding more ways to help you save. Because finding a good deal is everyone's deal. Because every dollar and every moment counts. On sale this season at Giant Eagle, you'll find lower prices on hundreds of favorites, like seedless grapes, ground beef, Giant Eagle American cheese, and more. Giant Eagle, because it matters. Limited time only through September 9th, 2026. Prices and participation may vary. See store for details.